Chaitanya, Ashtavatara Satasi Simari Sivakta Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nantakoti Vaishnavindi Ki Jai, Namacharya Shilahari Dasa Thakur Ki Jai, Premsikahosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitanam, Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adigur Bhakti Vindi Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopinath, Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Nababib Dham Ki Jai, Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulasi Devi Ki Jai, Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 Srimad Bhagavatam. Tenth Canto, Chapter 58. Krishna marries five princesses. Texts 7 through 12. Just chant this. 7th. Pritam samagatya krita abhivadana taya adi harda Ardhra Drisha Abhirambitaha Aprishtavan Tam Kushalam Saha Snusham Pitri Svasaram Pariprishta Bandhavaha Pritam Samagatya Krita Abhivadanas Tayati Hardardra Drisha Abhirambitaha Aprishtavangs Tam Kushalam Sahashnusham Pritis Vasaram Pariprishta Bandhavaha Pritam Samagatya Krita Abhivadanas Tayati Hardardra Drisha Abhirambitaha Abhrishta Vangstam Kushalam Sahashnusham Pitri Svasaram Pariprishta Bandhavaha Pritam Samagatya Krita Abhivadanas Tayati Hardardra Drisha Abhirambitaha Aprishta Vangstam Kushalam Sahashnusham Sri Svasaram Pariprishta Bandhavaha
Thank you.
Someone else can share. Men can chant. Someone else. Ritam to Queen Kunti. Samagatya, going. Krita, offering. Abhivadanah, his obeisances. Taya, by her. Ati, extreme. Hardha, with affection. Ardra, wet. Trisha, whose eyes? Abhirambita, embraced. Aprishtavan, he asked Tam from her, Kushalam, about her welfare. Saha, together. Snusham, with her daughter-in-law Draupadi, Pitri, of his father Vasudev, Swasaram, the sister, Pariprishta, inquired in detail, Bandavaha, about their relatives living in Dvaraka. Translation. The Lord then went to see his aunt, Queen Kunti. He bowed down to her, and she embraced him, her eyes moist with great affection. Lord Krishna inquired from her and her daughter-in-law, Draupadi, about their welfare, and they in turn questioned him at length about his relatives in Dvaraka. Purport.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur envisions that as Lord Krishna was sitting on his seat He saw his aunt Kunti approaching in great eagerness to see him. He then rose at once, quickly went up to her and offered his obeisances. Her eyes moistened with extreme love, she embraced him and smelled his head.
You can read text 8, the translation.
So overcome by love that her throat choked up and her eyes filled with tears, Queen Kunti remembered the many troubles she and her sons had endured. She thus addressed Lord Krishna, who appeared before his devotees to drive away their distress.
This is extraordinary that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of everything, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha, who lives in his own abode in Goloka Vrindavan and is enjoying himself with all of his eternal associates there. Still, he comes to the material world, to this God-forsaken place, not completely forsaken, but somewhat forsaken. And he comes and he interacts with devotees, mostly, some non-devotees also. And he interacts in loving exchange. Why does he do this? Because, first of all, he's a very loving person. He's the supreme lovable. He's the most lovable and he's the most loving. Maybe we've met some loving people in our lives. I remember some elderly lady or something like that that was just so loving, wanting to do everything. Would you like this? Would you like this? Take this, take this. So loving. Maybe it was because of family relations, or maybe it was just because they're loving for everyone. We get some idea. We appreciate that. Where does that loving tendency come from? It comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has all the qualities. He has male qualities, female qualities, transcendental male and transcendental female qualities. Everything that we can imagine, everything, janma jasya yataha, everything comes from him. It all emanates from him. There's nothing that's outside of him. Nothing that exists, just like the scientists, or shall we say so-called scientists, so foolishly say that this universe came about by chance from the void, by accident. This is, I think, the epitome of foolishness, to make such a statement which has no proof, no evidence, and no logic, no sense. A big universe with so many persons, living entities, order, design, beauty, emotion, everything, and to say it all comes about, comes out of the void, which of course is not even existent. There's no such thing as a void. And even if there were such thing as a void, then the void would be, by definition, nothing. That's what void means. So how does everything in the universe come from nothing? Next time you meet a scientist, you could ask him that, if he could explain that. Of course, they try to give some Big Bang theory and so many things. We don't accept it at all. Prabhupada didn't accept any of their ideas because they're all based on the Big Bang. Life comes from matter. Matter comes from the chunk. Where does the chunk come from? It comes from the void. It all comes back to nonsense talk. But we're fortunate that we've been properly saved from such a foolish theory, because when one accepts such a foolish theory, then nothing means anything, because there's no purpose. What is the purpose of void? What is the purpose of accidents? What is the purpose of matter? It doesn't mean anything. And then the life, if there's no such thing as a living entity apart from matter, then when the body is no longer usable, then that would be the end of it, when the body is discarded, it's either burned, or nowadays they're burning more, it's cheaper. And Prabhupada gave the good practical explanation, yeah, better to burn the body, why waste so much land that you could be growing food? So either burned or eaten if it's thrown. Or if you put it underground, then it decomposes, becomes earth. Or if you just leave it, throw it somewhere, or put it in water, then it's eaten by jackals or vultures or fish or something. So that's their idea, that after giving up this body, there's nothing. That's the end of it. Swamiji, Professor Kotowski said, after this body is finished, that's it, there's nothing else. Prabhupada considered that the classic moment of ignorance. So, the point is that if nothing exists after this life for us, then what is the use of it? Then the use is, of course, just to enjoy your senses as much as possible for now. Don't worry about what's right or what's wrong, because how can there be any right or wrong? And there's no life after death, so there's no one will come. Even beg, borrow, or steal. Charvak Muni, he said, beg, borrow, or steal. Get ghee. Don't worry. Get sense gratification. That's the point. Don't worry about the future, because when the he was an atheist, so when the body's finished, there's nothing left. The classic atheistic view. So this atheism is certainly will spawn unlimited sinful activities. Because as soon as you take God out of the picture, as soon as you take God out of everything, then sins just come unlimitedly. They just flow like a huge waterfall. There's no way to stop them. As soon as God is removed, then it's just like as soon as you remove the sun from the sky, it's darkness. Krishna Surya Samamaya Haya Andhakar Jahan Krishna Tahan Nayi Maya Radhikar. Krishna is like the sun. He illuminates everything. He's the source of all luminous objects. He's the pure goodness, Pavitram. All purity comes from him. All dharma comes, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma comes from him. Dharma means what is right, what is religious, what is not sinful. And as soon as you take God out, then your so-called dharmas, godless dharmas, this dharma, that dharma, it all becomes full of sins. So they have removed God from, at least from so-called science, from the educational departments. Now, generally they don't allow much God to be brought in to the educational system for the children. It's not very much appreciated. And they give nice reasons why. They say, well, because there's so many different religions and we don't want to confuse the children, so we just keep it out. result is sinfulness. And the world, anyone who's an astute observer would have to say that the world is becoming overwhelmed with sinful activities. Now, they may not know what sinful activities are, but that doesn't mean that they're not happening. The Bhagavatam gives Parikshit Maharaj, and the Acharyas have indicated that there's four pillars of sinful life: illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating. And we can see those things are on the rise. There's not any decrease. Unlimited illicit sex, unlimited meat eating, unlimited intoxication, unlimited gambling. Now every city has a gambling casino practically of any size. Before it was one, Las Vegas, then somewhere else, or Monte Carlo. Now practically everyone, because, and now it's online. You can gamble, you can have illicit, everything. And no one's upset. And if they're upset, they don't know what to do about it. They're also somewhat captivated by it. So they're a little afraid to criticize because they may lose some of their own attachments. I mean, they may lose some of their own sense credit. So it's a horrible situation. We shouldn't be complacent or satisfied that everything's going okay. Visualize world peace. They say sometimes bumper stickers, visualize world peace. United Nations, United. League of Nations. One failure after another. There's no peace. There's no purity. There's no happiness. Because God has been removed. Like, yes, they're right, actually. Because they remove God, everything is void. Just like if you have zero, it's zero. And if you have two zeros, it's also zero. And if you have so many rows of zeros, it's still zero. As soon as you put the one there, then it has value. But they have removed that one, the Supreme Krishna. Well, we're very thankful to know this, and we need to know scientifically, philosophically, but in addition to that, we can appreciate how Krishna is interacting in loving ways, in wonderful pastimes that are so adorable, so entertaining, so mysterious, everything. We have both sides. We have the scientific philosophy, which we need to know, and we can appreciate Krishna's wonderful pastimes. Even with Arjuna, he's speaking philosophy, but the relationship is so nice. He's chastising him, and he's acting as a friend. And we shouldn't think that it's just somebody made it up. Somebody made up Bhagavad Gita and made up the Vedas to put forward some religion, and it's all a new thing only within the last several hundred years. No, it's eternal. Okay, shall we continue? Well, let's read the next text, please.
Translation. Queen Kunti said, "My dear Krishna, our welfare was assured only when you remembered us, your relatives, and gave us your protection by sending my brother to visit us. For you, the well-wishing friend and supreme soul of the universe, there is never any illusion of us and them. Yet even so, residing within the hearts of all, you eradicate the sufferings of those who remember you constantly."
Yes. Even those who live in the material world. And the material world is meant for suffering. Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. It's meant for miseries.
But Krishna is so kind and so powerful that even in the material world, if one remembers Krishna, what does it say here? That who remember you constantly. And their miseries are eradicated. And I think to some extent we've all experienced that since taking up Krishna consciousness. We're not able to do it perhaps constantly, to remember Krishna constantly. We try our best. But to whatever extent we have been able to remember Krishna continuously, our miseries are eradicated. We don't have to worry about death. That's the biggest misery. If someone says, what are you going to do about death? We say, well, there's no death. What do you mean there's no death? What about when the body, the body's different? We have a complete answer, therefore that's not a problem. What about old age? That's a problem. It's not a problem. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that one who's intelligent, he laments neither for the living nor the dead. One who's actually intelligent doesn't take so seriously the activities of this body. Just like if a garment wears out, it's not that someone should get all emotional. The garment wore out. I just don't know if I can make it. No, the garments, they wear out. A well-adjusted person doesn't become all upset when a garment wears out. So there's no problem there. The garments wear out. He's not disturbed. But what about the inconveniences, the pain? Matras, parshas, tukonteya, shitoshna, sukudu. You have to tolerate. You might as well tolerate, because you're going to have to tolerate it anyway. Even if you don't believe in God, you don't serve Krishna, you'll still have to tolerate the pains and miseries of old age. But if you tolerate and you go on serving Krishna, then you get the miseries eradicated. There are many examples of devotees who, in their aged state, are quite happy and not afraid of the impending departure from the body, who are happy, and even though they have to face some pains, they're happily engaged in remembering Krishna and serving him. Purport?
The intelligent Queen Kunti here points out that even though Lord Krishna is dealing with her affectionately as a relative, he's not compromising his position as the well-wishing soul of the universe. In other words, the Lord doesn't play favorites. As he says in Bhagavad Gita 9:29, Samoham sarva-bhuteshu, I'm equal to everyone. So while the Lord reciprocates with all souls, it is natural that those who love him intensely receive his special attention, for they want him and nothing else.
Okay. Yudhisthira vacha kim nu acharitam shveyo na vedaham adishvaraha adishvaravara yogeshvaranam durdarsho yano drishta kumedasam. Translation.
King Yudhisthira said, O Supreme Controller, I do not know what pious deeds we fools have done so that we can see you, whom the masters of yogic perfection rarely see.
Yes. We have such a wonderful thing to look forward to that when we become completely purified and completely devoted to Krishna, that then we can relate with him very intimately as we like, either as the perfect master, or the perfect friend, or the perfect parent, or the perfect child, or the perfect lover. We We have all this to look forward to. And not only that, but it's not just Krishna alone, but Krishna and his whole entourage, his associates, his paraphernalia, everything, which is so nice. Goloka Vrindavan, with its varieties, unlimited varieties, so pleasing. The music there is millions and trillions of times more beautiful and attractive than the music here. We're attracted to the little bit of pleasure that we get from the material nature, but just imagine how much more blissful is the spiritual nature. Krishna is the supreme connoisseur of everything. He's such a great artist. Who can duplicate his artwork? Who can make flowers that have fragrances and they grow and then they reproduce themselves? They have the nice, supple, so many things. Who can do that? Who's more intelligent that he can create? Just like Einstein's. Einstein was very intelligent, but he couldn't create another Einstein. So Krishna's creating, he's creating Brahma, who's billions of times more intelligent than Einstein. And not just one Brahma, but millions and trillions of Brahmas. So he's the most intelligent, he's the most artistic, he's Nataraj, he's the greatest dancer when he was dancing on the hoods of Kaliya. Who could dance on the hoods of Kaliya, fighting him, smashing him at the same time very artistically? That's Krishna. Or his Rasalila, it's so famous, his dancing with Rasalila. Everything. Continue.
Translation. Requested by the king to stay with them, your mighty lord remained happily in Indraprastha during the months of the rainy season, giving joy to the eyes of the city's residents. Purport. If possible, the readers of the Bhagavatam should try to correctly chant the Sanskrit verses, which are exquisitely poetic.
Yes. Oh. From this we can learn that Krishna, although he's completely independent and he's self-satisfied, Atmarama and Swarat, still he's very moved by the love of his devotees and their requests. Here are the residents. This is Hastinapur. Where this is? This Hastinapur, that was. That they're requesting him to stay? Mm-hmm. Indraprastha. Okay. So he's being requested to stay and he agrees. He changes his plans. Sometimes he's planning to go and the devotees say, but we can't bear to be without you. So he says, okay, I'll stay. This is a very important part of God. God is not, he doesn't just have the Ishwara Bhava controlling and forcing everyone, but he also likes to be the servant of everyone. He's serving everyone, giving them all their necessities, and he especially, Samoham Sarvabhutesha Namedvesha Stinapri. But he especially likes to serve and reciprocate with his devotees because they have given up everything for him. They have nothing else. They don't have any. Just like a mother has so many children, she may have 10 children. But the newborn baby gets first attention. The others are as dear to her But because the newborn baby is so helpless, the mother has to give attention. So those who are not helpless, it's not a derogatory thing to be fully dependent on Krishna. He likes it. You might think, well, why doesn't he want us to grow up and take care of ourselves? Why do we have to depend on him all the time? Just like parents don't like that. Why are you asking me? Go do it yourself. But that's not very nice, because we may say like that, but loving parents, still, they go on reciprocating with their children. Even if they ask for something, they help. Whatever they ask for, the reciprocation of love is so great. Thank you very much. If there are any questions.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a very enlightening discourse. Towards the beginning of the class, you mentioned the logic that comes up all the time, this idea of Big Bang and how can everything come from a void. It's completely illogical. And there are many books about that, even by devotees. Vyasakipu, who just came out with a book about cosmology. The question I have is that a little later in the class, you said something that I'm trying to connect the two statements, and it's one of these so-called apparent contradictions, is that you were saying that if we remove Krishna, then everything becomes zero, everything becomes a void. And yet, at the same time, the atheists, they remove Krishna, so everything's a void, but at the same time, all the phenomenon, all the sounds and forms and phenomenon of this world is still going on for them. So if on the one hand, it's contradictory that everything could come from the void, but how at the same time do we have this logic that if we remove Krishna, then everything's a void, and yet everything is still there? So
everything is illusion, maya. That which is not. It's not that it doesn't exist. The Buddhists say that everything is void. We don't say everything is void. We say everything exists. The Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. That's correct. Mithya means false. Not exactly false, but illusory. So everything exists. We don't say it's imaginary. There's a difference between imaginary and illusory. It's not exactly what it appears like. Just like a fruit that's reflected on a mirror appears like a fruit that you could eat, but it's only a reflection, so it's illusory representation of the reality.
So am I understanding correctly that when we use this language where we even say, you know, everything is void, was mentioned in this class, or you say, we say, Prabhupada would say, so many zeros, everything is zero. So, in other words, we understand that in the sense that everything is zero, in the sense it's useless without Krishna, not that everything is literally a void or literally
zero.
Yeah,
that's correct. It's not that it doesn't exist. It exists, but it's not what it appears to be, and it's not a source of pleasure.
Yeah, this is a little historical thing about the history of science with the Big Bang. It was actually initially proposed and championed by a Belgian priest who wrote a book about it. Well, and he was associate of Einstein. He's obviously a theist. And then later on, the Pope actually endorsed his book as a confirmation of Catholic theology. So I guess my punchline is, how is the Big Bang absolute proof of atheism or absolute proof of anything as a speculative theory?
Well, it's based on atheism.
Well, this person, George Lemaître, was
a Belgian priest. He may say he's a theist, but anyone who could come up with such a theory is an atheist.
But he, he said he was a theist, and his life actually exemplified a theist.
Then he doesn't understand God properly.
Well,
how could the universe come without God? It's like that one. There was that one book. There was that one book by Hare Krishna. Why bad things happen to good people. He doesn't understand God. Everything comes from God. Janmadyasya, basic. That's the first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra.
Why are you assuming that he believes everything doesn't come from God?
How could the universe come from a big bang if there's no God?
Well, is that your theory or his theory?
Well, you said the Big Bang theory came from him. Now, if it's been altered since he presented it, that's a different story. If he presented it with...
He was the original champion.
Okay, if he championed it with everything comes from God, and then by natural sequence, then we can accept that, because that's Bhagavatam also. But if he presented it...
I would agree with that. There's a lot of complexity that one could consider.
But if he's saying it all comes from the nothing, which is what they say now, then that's incorrect.
Well, when we
and
say
if
they,
it's been adapted since his original presentation, then it just degraded.
When we're saying they, we mean every last person who's ever discussed the Big Bang in the name of science thinks one thing about it on a metaphysical or philosophical platform?
Sorry?
Well, when we say they think this about the Big Bang...
The Big Bang as it stands now.
Yeah, but...
If you visit Hayden Planetarium, which is the largest planetarium... in the world, in New York, they present a very mind-grabbing, shaking, vibrating, amazing presentation of how everything came about by a Big Bang, and they say it comes from the void. So we're referring to that particular prevailing theory. Yes. Maybe last question.
I was requested to have a dialogue with the head minister down here at 146, a big Baptist church, and he wanted to discuss creation. So he said that God created this material world out of nothing. So I said, well, maybe it's Vardhan, maybe it's unmanifest. He says, no, it's out of nothing. So I says, nothing, there's nothing independent of God. There's nothing can exist outside of God. He says, yes.
Okay, well, there may be some differences of word usage in that. The main thing is, I appreciate that he believes that God created at least, and his nothing... We could discuss pradhan, as you said. That's nice. Non-manifest avyakta. So we accept that. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.